This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.
Kia ora te whanau, talo fa lava, ahlanu masahlan, ni hao, kamlo, yuvla everyone, wanakam, heili khoshamadi, konnichiwa, annyeonghaseyo, ulavinaka, malolele.
The Dunedin Multicultural Council is a non-profit organisation that works to support the multi-ethnic communities in Otipoti.
Since many of our members are migrants, we focus on providing opportunities to get to know people and develop new skills.
Set up networks and links with the wider community of Dunedin.
Welcome, listeners. You're listening to Dunedin Multicultural Council live on air. You're Peter Kesher, and I have a special guest in the studio with me, Mr. Hendrik Koch. Welcome, Hendrik. So tell me, where do you come from?
Maastricht, a small city about the size of Dunedin in the far south of Holland, sticking into right into space between Belgium and Germany, along the Moos or the Mersey River.
And when did your family come over here?
1960 we arrived. And it wasn't to New Zealand, it was to Australia.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
And what brought your family to this part of the world?
Well, basically anyone that was involved with the building industry in Holland at the time, most of reconstruction had finished, a lot of unemployment within, or let's say less than ideal working conditions within the building industry, so they came out to new domains, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, anywhere they could apply their skills in a growth industry,
or right.
Economy, I should say.
So you eventually ended up here in Dunedin?
Yes. We immigrated to Australia because we come from a mining place, mining area, and my older brother was a mining engineer. My father was accustomed to working in the mine.
Yeah.
And so we went to equally a mining-focused city, northwest Queensland, called Mount Isa.
Oh, yeah. And so what brought you to Dunedin?
Actually, to escape Mount Isa.
Oh, right,
to escape
really?
Queensland, to escape all the crap I got into being a naughty boy.
Yeah.
I somehow didn't fit very comfortably. I grew my hair long, very young.
Yeah.
I was not too keen on playing sports.
Yeah.
To my father's infuriation, but I'm perfectly capable, physically quite agile, but I prefer art, I prefer drawing, I prefer singing, even if I can't sing in tune.
It sounds like you prefer a natural life.
Definitely one much more connected to the earth, to the ground, land around me. I'm very sort of intimate with the space around me. I like feeling a sense of other being apart from humans.
Yes. Yeah. I totally understand that. So, you are a sculptor, creator of natural art.
Yes, definitely. And I emphasize, I like making stuff that sort of is not solely imposed. I like being sympathetic to the material I work with.
Right.
And another one is that I'm not there doing it for an audience that is likely to buy, but more a receptive viewer who may be moved, impressed, inspired by the work I do.
Yeah. And what materials do you work with for your art?
Well, I've worked with marble, Oamaru stone.
Yeah,
all sorts of different metals in the past as well.
Yeah,
but mostly I work with wood, with trees.
Oh, okay. Yeah,
I carve, come, reshape the materials I work with. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And you were telling me that we were talking earlier on about that you have a native tree nursery.
I would say I'm first native tree nursery in this part of the country.
Wow.
I was producing plants primarily from my own property.
Yeah.
That snowballed into making a little bit of a business of it.
Yeah.
As a complement to my house and landscape design business.
Yeah.
So, because that isn't always there. coming on consistently. So when I didn't have any design work to do, I'd go down and get my hands into the dirt.
Nice. Yeah. You're also involved with Arauturu in the creek, developing and growing trees and bushes.
Yes.
How did that come about?
Well, partly because I was feeling a bit isolated living at my place. I live on Hereweka Harbour Cone on the Portobello Peninsula.
Yeah.
I should say Otago Peninsula, not Portobello Peninsula. it was just good way of getting out, seeing people.
Yeah.
And again, hoping to share the sort of passion and skills that I've got.
Great.
Gardening and conservation. And that's exactly what we've done. We've planted probably 50,000-100,000 plants in along the Kaikorea stream.
Well,
and anyone that's been to the Arauturu Marae will also appreciate most of the planting on the Marae ground as well has been planted by myself and other volunteers at the community gardens.
Right. And how can other people who are interested get involved with that project that you're on? Or do you need help?
We're always looking for helpers. Yeah. They come and go depending on whether they've got time and or they're in the vicinity. We often get people that are just for short stay here at university, might want to find a way of connecting with the community and come along and volunteer. And we do a regular Tuesday, Thursday between 10 and 3 in the afternoon. And we've been doing that for over 25 years.
Well, that's quite awesome. So Tuesdays and Thursdays between 10 and 3. Right. Oh, okay. And so where do you meet?
We meet at the Shetland Street Community Gardens, which is adjacent to the Marae. And we're an it's under the umbrella of the Dunedin Environment Centre Trust.
Okay.
And the trust is an associate of the Marae.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It's the Tau Iwi Marae. And we've got number of groups involved, including
Dunedin Multicultural Council. Yes. Yeah, where do you see your future here in Dunedin?
Well,
what would you like to see happen, like within the community and what you're doing?
Well, I think a lot of the passion I've had for conservation and particularly bringing it into the city has I think had positive effects. And there are other groups, including Transition Valley, Northeast Valley, and also here on Brockville. There's been quite a lot of initiatives, not always as successful as others, but the passion for getting involved, knowing your own community and learning about healthy eating is fairly prevalent throughout the city now. There's probably something like about 15 plus community gardens. Well, that's partly where also the sheds, it used to be called bloke sheds, I think they're called community sheds now.
Yeah.
Community gardens, edible gardens and schools, they're all ways of not only expanding people's connection to community and resilience, but it builds tolerance and inclusion.
Yeah,
and if anything, substantially enriching. I would think we're the poorer for it.
If
we don't open up and welcome those opportunities.
Yeah.
But as I mentioned earlier to you privately, is that it's essential for me to have that sense of community with other being, with the earth, you know? And I think it's a transition in the modern world in particular that is vital. I think we have to stop thinking of us as the sole entity.
Yeah.
Get beyond the anthropocentric notion of being. And I think having that, it seems like a bit of almost a religious rant on my part, but I'm not a zealot. I don't sort of inflict my arrogance on the people, but I do welcome them to have a sense of that.
Yeah.
By inviting them to come to see my place on the Taika Peninsula, which is a property, six plus hectares of land that's now converted into forest.
It's cool.
Over a 40-year period, it's inspiring. It gives a sense of what it could be like if we gave enough room for our natural world to recover.
Family came here in the late 50s, all over to this part of the world, and they all travelled by ship back then.
Yes, and it was called the Zeeman, which is a seaman.
Right.
The name of the ship that came out, which was an old troop carrier from last World War.
Yeah.
But as you indicate, is that we tend to gravitate towards the familiar, but at the same time, in a new land, new sensibilities, it's sort of a way of bedding into the community in a much more meaningful way if you not come at it by thinking, I'm in Rome and I'll do as the Romans do.
Yeah, yeah.
It's more like, what have I got to offer?
Mm.
You know? It's a sense of generosity.
Yes.
Because you're responding, you're reciprocating to the welcome.
Yeah.
People have allowed me to come here.
Yeah, true. They
allowed me to come here at 19 and go back to school.
Yeah.
I went back to school, did my school cert, university entrance, and went off to university.
Yeah.
Now, there are not many societies that offer you that opportunity.
Yeah.
Without having substantial monies either to do it or be lucky to be born on the right side of the rail.
You know? Yeah.
It's been a very generous place to be for me.
Yes.
It's allowed me to regrow healthy limbs rather than the toxicity that I was finding myself in before I left Australia.
So the 6 hectare place you've got, for people for listeners who are interested in coming out, how can they contact you?
Apart from my name and the telephone book, I do have a cell phone number, but if anyone was interested in possibly seeing the place or coming to see my nursery, it's 021-1168-320. Otherwise,
you can also contact Otago Access Radio and get hold of you through Dunedin Multicultural Council.
Yeah. But as appreciate, I'm not there open 5 days a week.
Yeah.
Or even 3 days a week. I'm mostly open by appointment.
Right.
Because I'm usually off doing other things.
Yeah.
And which makes it fairly difficult for people to know without having those sort of contacts, without having a phone number.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm open, when I'm available.
Thank you.
I've got a lot of friends that are vegans.
Yeah.
And there's a number of them also that are rather zealot vegans.
Yeah.
And of course, I've also got an association with the Green Party. And at the time I was convener and co-convener for the Deep South Green Party electorates. And I remember when we were organizing food for any gatherings, we often, even though it might only be 5%, possibly 10% that may be vegan, 15-20% for more vegetarian, but we still tended to cater mostly for vegans and vegetarians, because when meat eaters come to the things, they always want to try the vegan meals, yeah, but the vegans don't want to try the meat eaters yeah, deals. True. So we almost tip the proportions opposite to the registered numbers of choices, you know? Yeah. And most people are happy. As you mentioned before, all the different cultures have got different encultured habits in terms of gender, who cooks, who minds for children, who minds for the elderly, and who provides the care, and so on. It's been a challenge and a continual stage of readjusting as we in the West, and I will say the West because I can't speak on behalf of any other sort of cultural perspective confidently at this stage of my life. But some of us have made that change, but in particular the women expect different. They don't expect their men to be sitting on their chuffs waiting for the dinner to be served. They don't expect the washing to be left hanging outside because the man doesn't think it's their job. Get out there. It's that sort of, not so much any cultural bigotry, it's more just changing with the times.
Yeah.
You know, we've got a new reality, men and women sharing much more in the workplace with the whole gambit of things associated. Looking after house, earning income, and so on, you know? We have to readjust. Definitely, you have all those imperatives about adapting and building on what we believe does work. But it does give people a more respectful and dignified way of living their lives. But it sometimes does require a challenge, you know. And like you said about the guidance, spiritual guidance. About, do we need to have a particular set of principles to instruct us, or can we more effectively access those by just living our lives in a sensitive way and have access? Well, like for instance, we can all Google face of the earth, I mean religions of the world, you know. We can access an understanding of other people where 500 years ago or so, most people couldn't even read. They were reliant on the priest or the spiritual guide to give us some sort of instruction about how to be a civil and a sensitive soul in that society. But in the modern world, we do have that choice. But that doesn't negate the value of being together and celebrating or having a ritual that is meaningful to the collective. It's still good. But who dictates the rules? And, you know, and how dogmatic is the dogma? Not wishing to play tricks with words, but you know what I mean? Even dogma implies it's something that's instructed. It's almost imposed upon you.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. But I believe in this time, when you talk about Google, and you can get hold of anything at any time. And yes. So, I mean, the way I look at it, what Ash said to me, and after I had thought it through, and it was like, we know enough now to be able to help each other and help ourselves. And so that thing about needing instructions from others, I think, and it's been said a lot of times, we have the knowledge. It's just remembering who we are, who we really are, that we're able and capable of doing anything we like. But I think one of the biggest things we need to do is help ourselves so we can help others to go forward and find themselves and remember who they really are.
I think that's substantially happening because the knowledge base is so much broader and access to more verifying information. Okay, there are lots of rabbit holes, but overall, there is a collective wisdom that's building, but that doesn't negate that sometimes that people feel they need help, and who do they trust? Yeah. And of course, within a community, say like the Samoan community, it has endeavored, and many other communities that are more recent arrivals to the sort of their technological world have still hung on more closely to their sort of family tribal links. Yeah. And they're still relying heavily on trust that's embedded in their ancestry. Yeah. While in the modern world, how do we reestablish that in a broader sense? Who do we trust when we're not sure ourselves?
Yeah.
Fall down a rabbit hole.
We're going to have to end there. Thank you very much, Hendrik, for being on this program. I really appreciated your feedback and your and sharing your knowledge with us.
Well, thank you, Peter. Hopefully that didn't sound like too much of an esoteric rant on my part.
No, it was perfect. Yeah. Thank you for your conversation.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah. Kakite.
This program was produced by Grand Mountain Productions for Otago Access Radio, 105.4 FM.
This podcast was produced by ORFM Dunedin with support from New Zealand On the Air.